Item six is under county council. It's a time certain at 5:30. Welcome all of you here this evening. By the way, Florence, thank you again for hosting this. Great host, and we really appreciate that. This is a public hearing on Order 12-10-16-01, the matter of approving a boundary and referring the questions of formation of the Hasita Water People's Utility District and of a special levy for election. And we have Andy Clark from county council. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be brief and just kind of lay out, I think, where things stand prior to the hearing. This is the second step in the formation of the, the second public step for the county board and the formation of the PUD, at least the consideration of that. And tonight is the hearing for the public to have a chance to talk about it. Briefly, primarily the board's role is to confirm that the district boundary, proposed boundary, is correct. There's a couple other detail items that I've discussed briefly in the agenda packet for tonight. And then real brief, those are that the proposed PUD can't comprise an entire township. Based on the maps I've seen, this one does not. Therefore, that criteria is met. In addition, the PUD is not allowed to have within its territory, territory that's also part of another PUD. That is providing the same service. It appears from the maps that the proposed PUD boundary for Hasita overlaps some with central Lincoln PUD. The benefit there is that the central Lincoln is providing only energy. The proposed PUD here would be providing only water. Since there's no duplication of services, that statutory requirement is met. So I don't think you have any concerns there. Mind you, this is all preliminary to the public hearing. If we hear something different, we may have to look from the public, we may have to look deeper. But as far as those two things go, I think we're fine. The boundary that is proposed is the same boundary as Hasita Water District currently uses. That appears to be fine. I think it's fine for this board to adopt it. The one thing to note for tonight is if you hear testimony of folks who own property who are in the proposed district who want out, or vice versa, folks who want to be included, you may consider revising the boundary to include or exclude those properties. There's one matter that doesn't really hinge on any of the criteria for you to consider tonight, but it's worth noting. And that is that there is property both within the Hasita Water District boundary that's also within the city limits of Florence. I think it's worth noting because a lot of the impetus I understand for the formation of this PUD comes as a result of the conflict between the city's providing a services territory when it's annexed into the city. There are a couple of pieces of territory in the city that are also in the water district, and that is the Driftwood Shores area and the Fawn Ridge area. As I say, the only import of that, it really comes down to the vote on it, because the statute provides that if a majority of the people in those areas, and they're termed separate parcels of territory, in either one of them, if a majority of the voters in that area vote not to be included within the PUD, then it comes out. It doesn't go into the boundaries of the PUD. So those two areas can separately exclude themselves if they want. And that really is a matter of the election clerk having to separate out those ballots and count them separately. And I'll work with Cheryl Betchart to make sure that happens when necessary. You'll note in the memo, as well as the draft board order I put together, the timing of the election would be for the May 21st, if I remember the date right. And that's based on the discussions we had previously about what makes sense in terms of election costs for the petitioners. And because there's nothing else set in March, adding things to that ballot would mean that the folks adding that would be needed to cover the entire cost of the election. Under the May 21st election, it would be shared with everything else that's on that election date. And the last issue, which may be the only controversial issue in this thing, is the fees, which, as I note, have not been paid yet. Those are the processing fees for the work that Lane County and staff have done. This board has indicated previously that it wants to see those fees paid before the election occurs. What I've done in terms of a deadline for payment of the fees in the draft order, and mind you, it's a draft, you can do with it as you would. What I've done is picked the deadline for the May 21st election back up a couple of weeks to allow Cheryl and Elections Office to process whatever may come in on that date in time enough to get it sorted out before the election. And that's why there's sort of a 2-week lead into that election deadline. The filing deadline is, I can't remember exactly what, but it's roughly 2 weeks after the 13th of February. It probably fell on a weekend, and so I backed it up another day or so. I think that is all I have for now. As I say, in terms of the boundary, that's primarily the board's job tonight to determine what the boundary is to be. The staff has found nothing wrong with the current boundary for the Cedar Water District. Using that one seems to work fine, but subject to what the public has to say tonight.
Okay. Commissioner Sorensen. Mr. Clark, I wanted to ask you if the purpose of the hearing is limited solely to the issue of the boundaries of the proposed People's Utility District, and if so, are other areas of controversy or discussion subject to this public hearing, like the fees for an election, the setting of the election date, things of that sort?
No, I don't think there's any limitations on the hearing and what folks can speak to at the hearing unless this board decides to impose some. I guess my point is only that the criteria, as it were, tonight for the board's decision is what the boundary is, and to determine the boundary of the proposed district.
So we're just hearing the public hearing specifically on what is the proper boundary, and it's, as proposed, it's the boundary of the water district, and we are to determine if that is the correct boundary based upon public hearing, what people say. If they say yes, it is the proper boundary to have the public utility district be the water district, and then at the conclusion of the hearing, we can either make that decision tonight or we can defer that decision for a future date. How long do we have to make a determination of the date, of the whether or not the boundaries are proper?
If I remember right, the statute says 10 days after the hearing.
Okay.
For that determination. And that's, yeah, roughly right. I think
that's correct.
The folks can speak to what they will at the hearing.
Okay.
And anything the board considers relevant that they want to hear. Mm-hmm. What the statute talks about is the determination of the boundary based on the hearing and based on the report from the Department of Energy, which is also in your packet. I didn't mention that yet. And the conclusion from the Department of Energy report is there's nothing we find that sort of cuts against formation of the PUD. I've been a little somewhat mystified, I guess, by the statute's discussion of the boundary with respect to using the report in aiding determining what the boundary is, because at least in this report, there's nothing in there that speaks to the boundary at all. And so I think it's anticipated to be a fairly wide-ranging discussion at the hearing, but what it really boils down to is if the board thinks that boundary is correct.
Does the board have any discretion on determining that it is or isn't proper to include the portion of the city of Florence in the boundaries of the PUD, or are we more or less bound to what the proposal is from the people that are proposing the People's Utility District that they do want those areas that overlap the city of Florence that are currently within the proposed boundaries of the proposed PUD?
Statute doesn't really say. We got into a little bit of this sort of discussion with the EPA thing a while back. Commissioner Dwyer in that case sort of asking what's our discretion. And the statute really talks about the board's jobs to determine the accuracy of the boundary. Doesn't provide any sort of list of criteria for the board to say how you want to move the boundary around. My takeaway from that is essentially, as you suggest, the boundary is as proposed unless this board sees the need to alter it based on testimony received or any other evidence you have in the record.
In the event that the overlapping boundaries between Central Lincoln and the proposed PUD are approved by the public in the testimony and in the decision by the board, does that limit the activities of the new PUD? Can they provide electrical service, or can they do other things that a People's Utility District does, even though at the time they were formed by this board approving the boundaries or the voters eventually approving it? Can they now change their charter or change their purpose to compete with the other People's Utility District?
It may be, I'll preface it by saying it may be a matter that's out of the county's jurisdiction. You get into a discussion, potentially dispute between districts that share that territory. But my read of the statute is that you can't have more than one PUD providing the same service to the same territory.
So you can have two PUDs overlapping, but you can't have two PUDs that are overlapping providing the same service.
That's right.
Okay. Thank you very much. Thanks for also helping us focus the public testimony on the issue of the proper boundaries of the proposed PUD.
Mr. Handy?
Thank you. And this, Mr. Chair, would be maybe a process suggestion. Maybe you've already got this covered, but we had heard from the petitioners being interested in perhaps having a little extra time to lay out their case. And I wondered if there might be some benefit to having them go first, to have a little extra time to do that, so everyone here who maybe isn't informed about the proposal can be so, and their testimony then could be even more directly targeted towards the issues at hand. And then maybe there's a chance for a wrap-up from the petitioner if there's some outstanding questions that the public hearing has raised that they maybe want to address, being perhaps the experts here in this area. That's a suggestion.
Nope, and then I think we have this covered. Is the way we have it set up on the sheet, they're at the front and the very end. And so we have Ron Gerber up first, and then Leah Patton will close, will be the final speaker. But Ron, so Mr. Gerber, I think the request was 15 minutes. Is that correct?
I think that'll be sufficient.
And then I think Ms. Patton at the end was requesting 5 minutes at the end. Was that?
No, just the normal three.
The normal three? Okay, so we'll have Mr. Gerber come up first. And so we'll provide 15 minutes for Mr. Gerber. And then the rest of the folks who are signed up will be limited to 3 minutes. So, Mr. Gerber, if you want to come forward, and please state your name and address for the record as well. And then you have 15 minutes. Commissioner Stewart?
Did you formally?
Oh, no, I didn't, and my apologies, so I thank you for that. It must be the fine weather in Florence has got me, you know, going this route. So this time we'll open the public hearing. So now.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. Chairman.
Both is good, and when my boys call me, you can't save time, so.
I think I can be very brief about what the purpose of this is all about, and that is to convert the Cedar Water District from a water district to a PUD. Municipalities cannot withdraw property from a service from a PUD, and they can from a water district. The reason that I agreed to do this is that the water district needs to be able to plan long range for needs that are coming down the pike, including repairs, expansion of water production and whatnot like that. To do that, they need to be able to budget, and to be able to budget, you need to know how many customers you're going to have paying your bills. And if the city can go ahead and annex property as they have in the past and as they can in the future, that makes planning difficult, if not impossible. So other people apparently...
Can you state your name?
Oh, my name is D. Ron Gerber. I go by Ron.
Thank you.
Sorry about that.
Oh, that's quite all right.
I suppose there are other people out there that have other agendas, but that's always been my purpose. So that's the long and the short of it. I have a question direct to Chair, and that is the issue of the $24,000, because that's what I'm here to talk about.
I'll pass that on to legal counsel then, and so you want to discuss the $24,000?
Because I don't think it can be assessed at this point, I'd like to explain why.
Okay, I think the legal counsel actually said that during this hearing that that can be entered in as well, so I think if this is something you want to discuss, for your 15 minutes, and that's fine.
Well, that's actually most of my 15
okay.
minutes, so thank you, I appreciate right. the accommodation. The first thing I'd like to tender to each commissioner, and I think I have an extra one for staff if you want it, the statutes that deal with creation of a PUD. Not that I expect you to read those, although you certainly can if you wish, but they consist of 23 pages of legislation by the Oregon legislature. And of course they deal, among other things, with the formation of a PUD. Areas, and that's chapter 261 of the Oregon Revised Statutes. Areas that they include in terms of creation is requiring the petitioners to include boundary description, which we've talked about, require the petition to contain a proposal to levy monies for an engineering report. They describe the required contents of the petition in great detail, sometimes very confusing. We've had some interesting discussions trying to figure out exactly what it is has to be on that petition, which I think we finally got everything satisfied. Describe the basis of computing percentages of signatures required to put the initiative on the ballot. They instruct the county clerk on how the initiative measure is to be certified. They direct the State Department of Energy to hold a hearing. That chapter permits the county commissioners to hold a hearing only on the boundaries, as county council has directed. They direct the county commissioners to decide the boundaries based on the hearing record within 10 days. And for Mr. Clark's information, that's 261, 161.2. They direct the county commissioners to correct any deficiencies in the proposed boundary. They direct the county board, the governing board, to call an election for formation and a special levy to following the hearing at the earliest practical date. And I talked with the chairman of the water district, and he was happy with May, and I think I am too, so May is fine. They direct the county governing board to call an election. I'm sorry, they describe how the PUD board of directors is to be elected, presumably only if the petitioners approve the initiative petition, but they do direct how that's to happen. And they direct the county to issue a proclamation of district formation if the initiative petition passes. And that's all in chapter 261. In addition, chapter 261 goes on to describe payment of election expenses. And it reads, payment of election expenses, security deposit, 261.2102. First, I note that 261.210 makes no mention of land use fees as a cost of election. None. It only describes the election costs. 261.210 allows the county to require a bond. And I have a copy of 261 for each of the commissioners, and an extra copy for staff so that you can read along with me. What 261.210 does is it defaults to ORS 198.775. And the copies you're being given, 261.210 is on the left, and 198.775 is on the right, continues on to a second page. Again, it makes no mention of any allowance in terms of fees that can be charged. What can be charged, according to 198.775, the default language that 261.210 sends us to, is a bond or cash security deposit not to exceed $100 per precinct. On May 10th, we mailed a check to Lane County Elections for $300. I don't know, one of my checks was returned, and I don't know if the second one was or not, so I need to know that. If it has been, we'll retender it. But I think that $300 check has been sent already. 198.775 goes on to say the chief petitioners and then that's 198.775. It also allows the county to require the petitioner to post a bond for the election expenses. Again, there's no mention of any land use fees being postable in that situation or being required, I'm sorry, the petitioner being required to post any kind of land use fees. If the measure fails, the cash deposit will be delivered to the county and the petitioners will be required to pay the remaining election costs, and that's what our bond says. Our bond makes no agreement to pay any land use fees, and I'll confirm that in writing, signed by all three chief petitioners in the morning. But we are not agreeing that our bond covers any kind of land use fees. But we do understand that if the election fails, our $300 is not going to cover the cost of the election. We will, out of our own pockets, have to pay the balance of the election costs. We also note that 198.775.2 provides that if the measure passes, the district is liable for all costs and the petitioner deposit will be returned. We have approached the Cedar Water District about this, and the statute seemed to contemplate two methods of proceeding if the measure passes. Number one, the petitioners would organize the transfer of assets from the district to the PUD. Number two, the district itself, the existing district, would organize the transfer of its assets from the PUD. The district board would serve as trustees, is what the statute calls them, until the new PUD board was elected. The district announced to us that they would prefer that the district handle the transfer if this initiative passes. They have also acknowledged their responsibility, if the measure passes, for making sure that the expenses above for the election are paid, all expenses involved in the process are paid, and that the petitioners, if the measure passes, would not be held responsible. To do that, they passed a resolution 12.02, and I think you've seen this before, but brought along in case you haven't. I would ask that one copy be provided to each commissioner. And they've done a follow-up resolution, apparently, and I wasn't privy to this, but as I understand, there was some information verbalized by the commission that perhaps they would find themselves in the unfortunate situation of having the measure passed and nobody able to pay the $24,000 land use fee, which is coming down the pipe. And so the Water District has passed a resolution offering to put $30,000 into escrow, which, as I understand, would cover the $24,000 in change. And I have a copy of that resolution for each of the Board of Commissioners. Now, I want to define what I think I have authority to speak for and what I don't have authority to speak for. I have authority to speak with chief petitioners, and we are unanimous in that we're not going to pay $24,000 land use fee at this stage. Once this matter is submitted to the voters, and if it passes, then the voting is over, and whether there's a land use fee that can be charged at that point or not is not within the prerogatives that we as chief petitioners have authority to exercise. Once that election is over, and if it passes, then decisions about whether land use fees can be charged or not charged to issue the proclamation, which I think is the third step in this process, is between the county and the Water District / PUD. And apparently the Water District is prepared to pay that, and I cite as evidence of that resolution 12.04, which says they're willing to put $30,000 in escrow and pay it to the county if this matter passes. So that's the legal authority that I've looked at, and I disagree with Mr. Clark. I do not agree that this is a land use decision. Like I said, when you get to the next step, that is, we have the election, and if the election passes, there has to be a proclamation issued. Then at that point, I think, apparently the district is now agreeing that that's a land use decision and you're entitled to charge your fee at that point. And so I would say the county would not issue its proclamation until that fee was paid or there was a different resolution between the governing bodies, which I suppose could happen. And that's really all I have to say. I would hope that the county commissioners could look upon this as sort of a compromise solution to what initially looked like was headed toward court and lawsuit and a lot of expensive litigation and all that kind of wonderful faulty raw. That if the concern is this going to be paid, it will be paid if the election passes. If it doesn't pass, the petitioners, pursuant to their bond, will have to pay the election costs and everything will be at an end. So that's all I have to say, and if there are questions, I'll be happy to answer them.
Thank you very much. That was less than 15 minutes, so appreciate that. So why don't we go ahead and questions for Mr. Gerber, Commissioner Sorensen?
Mr. Gerber, do you recall when I asked about the purpose of the hearing is, could you give us your testimony on the boundary issue itself?
As far as I know, I've been told by the district manager that that boundary is the boundary of the Cedar Water District. I agree with everything Mr. Clark said. As far as those areas inside the city, if a majority of the voters vote against being annexed or joining the PUD, then they would, I presume, default to the city, although the water district, I don't think, would cut off water service to them until whatever accommodations needed to be accomplished were accomplished. But the chairman of the water board is speaking after me, and I think he would be more appropriate to tell you what would happen.
And so the boundaries that are proposed by the petitioners, namely the boundaries of the water district, are the boundaries that you would encourage the board to approve as being the boundaries of the proposed PUD?
Yes, sir.
And then with regard to the election costs, ORS 261-210 sub 1 seems to require that all expenses in any county of an election held under this chapter be paid from the general fund of the county. That's the origin of the funds for which an election will be paid. So if it costs $24,000 to actually hold that election in May, the statute seems to imply that that will be taken from the general fund of the county.
The last election we had in the water district was a recall where the district actually had to pay the election fee, and it was the only item on the ballot. That was $5,000. So if we're on the May ballot, I expect we're looking at perhaps $5,000, probably less, as our share.
Okay.
So I'm not quite sure where the $24,000 came from.
Okay. And whatever it is, it's taken out of the general fund of the county.
Yes, sir.
And then in terms of the repayment, there's a bond that's $100 per precinct. And are there three precincts involved?
Yes.
Okay. So that's where you come up with the $300.
Yes, sir.
And whether that's been tendered and rejected or tendered and accepted, we don't really know. But you're ready, willing, and able to tender it?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And then with regard to the bond, who do you actually, you pay the $300 to the county, but does that mean there's really no bonding company that pays over the $24,000 or the $5,000 or whatever it is? There's really no bonding company. It's
no.
Just a promise that those three petitioners pay the difference between the $300 and the actual cost of the election.
Yes, sir. That doesn't require a surety bond. It requires the petitioner's bond.
Okay. And then last but not least, regarding the land use issue, what is this land use issue? You refer to the land use issue, and I was trying to drive this entire hearing down to one thing, and that is the thing the board has to actually determine, and namely, what are the boundaries?
Well, and I don't think that has anything to do with the boundaries. The county code provides that if there's a district formation, then there's a certain percentage of the value that's considered a land use event, application filing, whatever you want to call it. And it goes on to provide that the application fee, if you will, is based upon a percentage of the value of the property not to exceed $24,400, $24,600, something like that. And the value of the property inside the water district greatly exceeds the maximum fee that can be charged, and so the number is 24,000 and change. If there is no, if the election is unsuccessful, to my way of thinking, there is no land use matter to be decided. It was an election, we lost, we figure out how we're gonna come up with the $2,000, $3,000, $4,000, $5,000 we owe you, and we're done. On the other hand, if the election is successful, at that point, the board has indicated, petitioners are agreeable to this, the board has indicated that it will take over everything from there, and there are statutes out there that oblige the board to pay all of the costs of the election. We get our $300 back, the board pays all of the district / PUD pays the rest of the fees. And if you think about it, that legislative schematic probably makes a lot of sense. I mean, why would a county charge somebody $24,000 to form a district when it didn't get formed because the election didn't pass?
Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate your help on this.
Any questions, Mr. Gerber? Commissioner Bozovich?
Thank you. ORS 261 also allows us to take up to 4 weeks to hold this hearing. We can adjourn it and whatever. Do you have an issue if we continue this hearing while we get an opinion possibly from the State Attorney General or the Secretary of State relative to the our ability under our Home Rule Charter to charge fees?
Well, seeing as we're looking at May 6th and everybody seems to be happy with that, I see no reason why additional time to consider. I don't know that we have authority to waive it, but I presume we do, and we are willing to do that.
It's not so much waiving it, I'm just, you know, asking if you're
agreeing to an extension.
If you're okay with, yeah, because I think maybe rather than going straight to a resolution on the boundary and including something in that resolution relative to fees that's obviously in dispute, I would rather continue this hearing for a couple weeks and get further opinion on that, maybe from a third party source, and before I'm willing to say definitely there's a drop dead on paying fees or no, we're going to pull that from the resolution. Because I'm hearing from two attorneys that are licensed in the state opposing opinions. So that's where the board is right now. So I just wanted to see if it was okay with the petitioners, as you're representing the petitioners, if we choose, as we're allowed to under ORS, continue this hearing for a couple weeks or maybe even before.
Well, the petitioners would have no objection. I'll speak for all of them.
Okay. Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, members of the board.
So we do have several folks signed up from the public. And
the next one I'd like to have speak would be the chairman of the board so he can speak to his resolution. I think that would make some sense in terms of continuity.
That's Mr. Hirsch.
Never mind.
Yep, we've got it in line here. So we'll call Mr. Hirsch up, and you can come forward, state your name and address for the record. Are you good? Are you okay with 3 minutes?
Yeah, I can do it in three.
Okay.
Here's a copy of the Lane manual that addresses the $24,600. I only had one copy.
Okay. Okay, so Mr. Hirsch, you state your name and address for the record, and then just for the record, we have Nancy Hersberg on deck. So,
good evening, Commissioners. My name is Bob Hirsch, and I live at 5104 Woodlake Way in Florence, Oregon. I'm a customer of the Hasita Water District, and I'm the president of the Board of Commissioners of the Hasita Water District. I'm here tonight to speak on behalf of the Board of Commissioners of the Water District. First, I want to make it perfectly clear that the Water District takes a neutral position on the forming of a People's Utility District. The Water District previously passed a resolution in June, Resolution 2012-2, stating that it would be responsible for all financial obligations as required by state law and Lane County relating to the formation of the Hasita Water People's Utility District. If the district voters passed this ballot measure. County Council had previously been provided a copy of that resolution. As we understand things, you are hesitant to allow this measure to go forward because of a $24,600 land use fee. In view of this, and to fulfill our obligations as stated in our June resolution, the Hasita Water District Board passed another resolution, Resolution 2012-4, which states that the district will put $30,000 into a local escrow account that will be available to the county to cover expenses of the formation of a Hasita Water People's Utility District if the measure passes. In the event that the measure does not pass, the funds will be returned to the district. We believe our actions are in the best interest of the Hasita Water District's customers, and we affirm our belief that the people of the district should make the decision as to form a PUD or not form a PUD using the democratic process. We hope you agree. That concludes my testimony. Any questions? I'd be glad to respond.
I think what we'll do, if we have questions, if you want to write down questions, and then after the rest of the testimony, if you can be available, that'd be great.
Sure.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you for being here.
So next we have Nancy Herzberg. And then on deck, what's Elson Zimmerlander. Okay. I'll let Jay say it next. So. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for being here. Is this sufficient? Can you hear?
Yep, we can.
Thank you. My name is Nancy Herzberg. I live at 5657 Marchin Road. I have been a Hasita Water District customer since 1999. The district does an admirable job of providing high quality water. I wish to see it remain a viable enterprise. I would like for all Hasita Water District customers to have the opportunity to vote on the matter of converting to a public utility district. As there are ample signatures to require such a vote, I request the commissioners dutifully allow it to go forward without demanding the petitioners pay pre-election. Hasita Water District has prudently budgeted for the cost. As you yourselves were democratically elected, I respectfully request that you allow an election by those affected to determine the direction of Hasita Water District. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Next we have Elson.
Commissioner?
Yes.
They wanted to watch the debate.
Oh,
so
okay.
They turned in
okay.
A letter each.
All right.
Record.
Very good.
Isn't this riveting enough?
So then we have Henry Newhouse.
Hanks.
He's the second.
Is one of them.
Oh, that's one of them. Okay.
Yeah, of them.
Debate as well. All right. Frank Souza.
Another casualty of the debate.
Must be a debate. And I'm guessing Karen Souza is casualty of the debate as well. All right. So, Leah, you're up next.
It is a thin crowd tonight because of the debate. So one more time, I have a packet for each of you. My name is Leah Patton. I live at 04699 North Chetty Road, just north of the city limits of Florence. I have been a very satisfied customer of Hasita Water District since 1989. Since early 2010, we customers of Hasita Water District have been working hard to gain our right to vote to convert our water district to a people's utility district. In our efforts, we have been confronted by nothing but runaround from county staff. Continually, we ask questions via telephone, via email, and in person. The only responses we received were misleading at best, and many of them totally, and I believe deliberately, were wrong. This measure should have been placed on the ballot long ago. My sole purpose in supporting this measure, because of Hasita Water District, is I want to protect the district from what I think it would be a hostile takeover by the city of Florence. My sources from inside the city of Florence and verified by the media say the city of Florence is going to begin annexation big time right after this election. Indeed, the mayor of Florence has told many people that the city plans to annex properties, remove those annexed customers from Hasita Water District until they bankrupt the water district. As the mayor of Florence put it, then the city won't have any water problems. I have absolutely no doubt the county staff, in my opinion, has been working hand in hand with the city of Florence to delay our efforts for this PUD. In legal terminology, I believe that is called collusion, an agreement between two or more parties to deprive a third party of legal rights, which would be our right to vote on this PUD. To me, that means county staff is guilty of mis and malfeasance of office. When I was working on Capitol Hill, if I had given some people false information and delay, I would have been and should have been fired. Because of the way this matter has been handled, because of the collusion with the city of Florence, I believe this Board of Commissioners should call a special election to put this issue before the voters as soon as possible. I know they've agreed on May 6th, and I would accept it, but I think it should be soon. And because of that miss and malfeasance by county staff, I believe the county should pay any and all expenses created by the PUD election. In other words, the county should foot the bill. That would be the honorable thing to do. That's the end of my comments, and gentlemen, thank you one more time for coming to Florence. I understand you've come here more this year than in the last several years, so thank you.
Well, thank you very much. And before we move on, is there anybody else who'd like to testify tonight? I want to make sure we have this available. Oh, yes, sir.
I'm general manager for Hasita Water, and would you like me to talk about...
If you want to come forward, and that would be great. If you could just, and your name, sir.
Scott Meyer.
Okay.
I'm the general manager for Hasita Water District. My address is 87797 Sandrift Street. I'm here as the manager. You all should have received some information on the original packet that shows the tax lots and whatnot by lobbying association, and along with the map. That map is identical to the map of Hasita Water. So we're asking not to include or exclude any customers from our map. The map is identical. The map was put together in the summer of 2011. Gene Wabian Associations did the map using tax lots and whatnot. And then we took and sent that, the descriptions to our engineers, and they inlaid that over a map, and the map came out exactly as what we thought. So the map that the petitioners gave you was, in fact, the exact map for the district. And just to kind of clear everything, is the comment was made earlier about there's Driftwood Shores and Fawn Ridge are actually in the city, but within our district. There's nothing wrong with that. And if we become a PUD, they'll still be within the city, but rather than being in Hasita Water District, they'll be in Hasita PUD, and everything will continue as it is now. Okay. That's all I got.
Very good. Appreciate it. Thank you very much. So I guess the question I have then, Commissioner Bozovich, you brought up the issue of potentially extending this hearing until we get a third-party legal. And if you want to expand on that, and then maybe hear from the rest of the board on that before we...
Sure.
Before we close the public hearing,
we may not be closing it. Yeah, thank you. We are allowed to continue this public hearing under the ORS, specifically for as much as 4 weeks to get through this process. I fully support the idea of forming this PUD. I almost wish that this method was available to other special districts that are dying due to annexation. River Road Parks, Santa Clara Fire, I could name 10 other special districts that are getting eaten alive by annexation and loss of customers. So I fully support and understand why. I doubt the city of Florence is interested in serving people out to Sutton Lake with water service. So, you know, some of the comments of one of the petitioners, I think, have to be taken somewhat with a grain of salt. And I don't believe our staff has deliberately tried to delay or give out false information. I know our staff, and I don't feel that they've tried to do that. And seeing the current mayor is a lame duck mayor and will no longer be mayor after the first of the year, I kind of wonder how he's going to manage to do a bunch of annexation post-election. That all said, there is a difference of opinion about what ORS 261 says relative to the election cost versus what we're allowed to charge under our home rule charter for processing applications, and it's not a land use application. It's under our county clerk. It's not our land management. There's no land use decision being made here. I would love to see somebody explain to me the land use decision that's before the board tonight. We're determining whether you can have an election and form a PUD. It's not going to change the use of any property within that PUD. It's not going to rezone anybody. It's not going to adopt a comprehensive plan. It's not going to change the UGB limits. There's no land use decision before us. What our attorneys are telling us is we have the legal ability under our home rule charter to charge fees in front of expenditures, and we have in the past when other districts have been formed in our county. Rowell River Water District is a perfect example. So to not do that sets us up to be sued for not applying our rules equally to all applicants. And I would like to have that issue resolved before I adopt a resolution that either includes requiring you guys to pay a fee or excludes you from paying a fee and accepts the whole issue of having the water district bond the cost and pay us after the fact. Our past practice has been to charge these fees up front and collect up front prior to election, prior to scheduling election. And we've done that underneath of our home rule charter authority, which is not part of ORS and is different. There's a conflict of opinions about which takes precedence. I don't feel comfortable tonight adopting a resolution one way or the other. So I'd like to propose continuing this hearing for at least 2 weeks. I don't know. I'm looking towards council and the administrator, maybe it may take as much as four, and requesting an opinion from either the state attorney general's office, possibly the secretary of state's office. I'm not sure who the correct authority is that might be able to resolve that difference between ORS and our county home rule charter, and whether or not we are legally bound by our past practice. Now, what the board has previously directed staff to do is to review our fee schedule, and we promised to make it retroactive to this application should we reduce that amount from what's in the current lane manual relative to this process. So,
Chair, Commissioner Bosevich, I would recommend, I don't think we would get anything back from the state. I think they'd either decline to give us an opinion or we won't get an opinion, okay, anything back from them in a month. We could get a private attorney to look at it. It'd have to be somebody who understood the charter, because it takes a while to understand what charter counties could do. So I would recommend November 7th. I'm not sure we're meeting the 14th, because that's the week of the AOC conference.
Right, we're down week.
So I would recommend November 7th if you do decide to postpone, to continue the hearing, and we can immediately start looking for someone who has the experience of charter counties and knowing what they can do and what they can't do, and this particular issue.
Commissioner Stewart. Thanks, Mr. Chair. I don't want to try to confuse issues here this evening, as Commissioner Sorensen has tried to focus us on what our mission tonight is. Our mission is to have a public hearing to determine the boundaries. I don't know, can we pull apart, they're included in this resolution, but can we pull apart the fee conversation and actually finalize that the boundary is the correct boundary. I didn't hear any opposition to the boundary this evening, or anybody want to be removed, added to the boundary this evening. So for me to understand the necessity to continue the public hearing, I'm not seeing the need for that specific action. Can we formalize the boundary and say that within 4 weeks we will determine the date of, you know, after further information on our legal ability to charge these fees, before or after, can that be determined at the time of sending this to an election date?
Well, I think you can. I think you can certainly close the hearing tonight, unless there's more that people want to say. But I don't know that you need to hold the hearing open in order to have the determination on the fees. I think you can take that into deliberation when you meet again on the 7th, whenever that is. I guess I would suggest that you still do everything in one order, and that is determine that the fee is correct and refer the question on to election in one order, rather than having two orders to do that. But there's no reason you can't sort of decide that issue in your brain, and we'll document it in the order that's done for the meeting on the 7th, and just do it all at once. But
so let me follow this. So we could close the public hearing. The board has the information. We don't have to do, are we bound by a certain time frame to put this to an election?
Ten days from the hearing. Well, and let me actually correct that now that I think of it. Yeah, you have the authority to extend the hearing, but you have to make your decision within 10 days. And so the effective way to extend the decision date is you're right, extend the hearing.
Yeah.
So we would like to do that.
That's what close the hearing within 10 days, we have to determine the boundary. And it doesn't really say set the election day. Calling the elections under a separate section, it's under 171.
Right.
Doesn't refer to having to be done by any certain date. It's kind of an interesting, typical.
It's the earliest
ORS. It's very foggy.
It's the earliest practical date.
So but it doesn't even say when we have to make that declaration of when the election will be.
Right.
But I would assume it'd be probably best to, at the same time as we could, determine the boundary to set the election.
And you could do it either way. I think it's neater if you wait and do it all in one order. But certainly I think you have all the evidence you need, especially with the general manager's testimony tonight, to certify essentially that the boundary is correct and accurate, and there's no question there that I've heard. But it's up to you when you actually want to make that formal determination.
So what I'm hearing is that we could essentially close the public hearing. We could move to declare the boundaries that are presented as the boundaries for the petition, and then at a later date, hopefully not too later, a couple weeks or whatever it takes to do the research and present back, then we could do an order that sends this to an election date and with or without fees requirements. Is that right?
Well, I don't think you want to close the hearing tonight, if that's what's part of that. I think you need to continue the hearing in order to extend your final decision on the boundaries out beyond 10 days.
I'll wait, listen to some conversation.
Okay. What's that?
Mr. Swanson?
With regard to a continuation of the hearing, Mr. Clark, do you believe that we would have to provide additional written notification to the public or not under ORS 161.161?
161 or 261?
261.
No,
161.
I don't think you'd have to provide any additional notice.
Just continuation of the public hearing to allow for an additional public hearing at some tonight announced date and time and place would be sufficient to meet the notice requirements?
I think so.
Okay. And then with regard to testimony that was presented tonight, specifically ORS 261.210, that the county bears the cost, the initial cost of the election, and that the petitioners must put up a cash amount of $100 per precinct, and they also must put up their promise that they will pay the county's costs in the event the election is unsuccessful, and that the county bears the costs in the event the election is successful, and the petitioners get their $100 per precinct back. Do you agree with that analysis of the cost of the holding the election, and does your is your opinion changed by this testimony, or is it
no,
or do you agree with it?
I think I agree with it. Frankly, I haven't spent a lot of time looking at the cost of election stuff. Mm-hmm. I've stated before my opinion on the other fee, and I think...
But I'm just talking about the actual election itself, that ORS 261.210 and 198.775 seem to spell out the process with regard to the election cost.
Yeah, yes.
Okay, and the fact that the county hasn't budgeted any money for this election, and we're anticipating putting it on the ballot in May in the current fiscal year, where we haven't budgeted $5,000 to hold the election, not to mention the election for the board of directors of the district, which also, as I understand, occurs in May as well, at the point that we put it on the ballot. So we have five other elections as well as the formation election. Because once we put it on the ballot, we make notice that it's going on the ballot, then the elector, then the board of directors, candidates can file, and they can run their campaign simultaneously with the formation, and then whoever gets the most votes, and this is a gross simplification of that law, but basically whoever gets the most votes, the top five people become the directors. So is it your view that you know, we're going to have to try to collect all this money up front, or is it sufficient for purposes of election cost that the statute lays it out? The county puts it up front, pays for it, the bond that they put up, the $100 each for precinct, and then they agree to pay the cost of the formation election if it's unsuccessful. Do you pretty much agree with all that? I mean, it doesn't seem like there's much in dispute.
No.
Okay. And the part that is in dispute is the payment of fees under Lane Manual. And for those of you following along, the Lane Manual is the summary of Board of Commissioners board orders, somewhat below the status of an ordinance by the County Board of Commissioners, definitely way below the status of a state law passed by the legislature, approved by the governor, and way below the state constitution. But it does say, after we get through, that you have to pay $4 if you want to waive the time for a marriage license fee, you know, in Lane County. After you get past that $4 fee, you're down to special district boundary changes that are formations, dissolutions, mergers, consolidations, and incorporations would require a payment of $24,600 for any district that has over $250 million of assessed valuation. Is that the origin of the $24,000 term?
Yeah.
Okay, so this would be both, under the way I hear it, it would be $24,600 because your formation of a district, and then after they form the district, they would then be merging or consolidating the water district with the
no.
PUD,
no.
And that would be a merger, and it's a separate
no.
action.
No.
That would be another $24,600.
No, that's not my understanding.
Okay.
And I know the petitioners, frankly, have labored under that misunderstanding for a while. There isn't, that I see, anywhere in the statute that allows for a reconstitution of a water district as a PUD. So the process is to form a PUD, let the two districts figure out what they're going to do now that there are two districts in terms of exchanging infrastructure, billables, all that stuff. It's not the county's job. We don't play a role in that. That's between the districts. And once that's done, if there's a district left over that doesn't need to be there, i.e. the old Tecito Water District, it can dissolve itself through the process of the statute, but
what's
there's
the
not a merger process.
What's the authority for Lane County to charge $24,600 to have a formation of a district, a special district? In other words, this, I'm assuming there is a statute that says counties can charge fees for marriage licenses, and they can set those fees, and that's in the first part of the fees to be charged by a county clerk. But what is the authority to apparently contradict a statutory scheme to form a people's utility district that's laid out, and the petitioners seem to be trying to follow that? What's the authority of the county to charge this fee? I mean, common sense is it's going to cost money and somebody's going to have to pay the cost, but really what's the authority for the county to charge this money and thwart the rights of the petitioners to get an election on the district?
The authority, I think, is pretty much as Commissioner Bozovich stated. The county has common law and charter authority to charge fees to recover cost for the stuff that it does. There are a number of fees that we collect for which there is no specific statutory authority. And there isn't a conflict between, in my opinion, there's no conflict between the election costs that are discussed in Chapter 261 and our fee to recover cost for processing the application, the cost of this meeting, my time, Leanne's time, et cetera. You know, at the end of the day, it's a policy decision for this board as to what you want to charge fees for and how much you want to charge. But the authority is longstanding, and there isn't a question in my brain that this board has the authority to charge fees to recover costs unless there is a specific statutory language that prohibits it. In this case, there is none. There's no inconsistency between what we are charging for, and as Commissioner Bozovich said, it's not a land use fee, and I have repeated that I don't know how many times now. We're not making a land use decision in this particular instance. There are cases where under a Chapter 198 matter, be it annexation, formation, whatever, where it may be termed a land use decision, because part of the process under Chapter 198 is to consider consistency with the comprehensive plan. That, and when the board decides, yes, this issue is consistent with it, that may in essence be a land use decision. That is specifically called out as not part of the process for PUD formations.
Is the fee under Lane Manual, is that the sole money that the county would be charging the petitioners? And is it proper that we charge the petitioners? Because it's a formation fee under your basic theory is, hey, it's common sense. We're incurring costs. The taxpayer's incurring costs here. We have a Lane Manual provision that says we can charge $24,600 for the formation of a district that involves an assessed valuation of over $250 million. You know, hey, pay it up. But it doesn't say who pays it. Who pays it? Who pays the fee? Can the county pay the fee?
Yes.
Okay.
If you want.
So one way to reconcile the fact that there's a fee to be paid, but there's nobody to specifically tag for the fee. I mean, if it was a modification, we would know who was proposing it, right? It'd be the district that's involved. But this is a formation. So who would actually pay the fee? Well, the answer could be someone could pay.
Someone could.
I would suggest the West Lane Commissioner pay myself, but you know, that's just a minority opinion on the board.
Mr. Stewart.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, and thanks, Commissioner Sorensen, for allowing the thought process to move forward. So, in my mind, we have a petition to send to the voters whether or not to create the PUD, is that correct? Whether or not, the question to the voters is whether or not to create a PUD, is that right?
Yeah, two questions really. One is, whether or not to form the PUD. The other is whether to authorize the issuance of a special levy for the cost of an engineer's report of up to $25,000. The point of that report is to have an expert look at the stuff involved with the services provided by the PUD, in this case, water service, and decide whether how that ought to work and whether it's practicable.
And so so the question is, and then our fee, the $24,000 fee, is for the creation of the PUD? Is that right?
It's formation is the word.
Or formation of it, so that's it. Maybe I'm not using the right technology, but that's, you know, legally the formation of the PUD, is that right?
Yeah, I mean, the purpose for the adoption of the clerk's fees that this board adopted 5 or 6 years ago now, whether it be an annexation to a special district under 198 or any sort of district, was to recover the cost for staff's work in carrying the matter through from the application through the board's decision and follow-up work that it happens after the board issues its decision, filing with the Department of Revenue and that sort of thing. So it's to recover the cost of staff time, essentially, and out-of-pocket costs for publication.
Okay, so follow this further. If this moves forward, let's hypothetically say the fee was paid up front and it moves forward to election and it is successful, is there any additional fees after that that we're going to charge, or is that include all the final work that takes place and then they're figuring out how they consolidate their two districts and move forward? Is there any additional items that they're going to have to pay for to get it?
Well, that the fee envisions everything this board needs to do through the process, which is the formation of the PUD, doesn't include election costs necessarily. It also wouldn't include a separate process, which may be the eventual dissolution of the water district. For which it's a separate process, and there's a separate fee for that.
So I guess I'm struggling just a little bit here with, I'm feeling like questions going, what's being asked here is to send the question to the voters to say yes or no on creation or formation of a PUD. And then if it is successful, then we move forward with the processing of the work, or are you saying we have to process
there's really
formation
not,
ahead of time?
Yeah, there's really not much work other than a couple of details once the election's done in terms of formation. The clerk reports back the results of the election, the board issues a proclamation, and we probably need to file maps and whatnot with the Department of Revenue and our own assessor. But other than that, your work is done as far as I can see. And that's what I mean when I say that there's not really a role for the county to play in what happens between the two districts once they're formed. That's it.
Commissioner Sorensen?
You know, I was thinking about this maybe in a practical sense, that that the petitioners have laid out that, you know, they've submitted their petition. We've now gotten the report from the Oregon Department of Energy. We now have at least the evidence in front of us about the district boundaries. And now the issue is, well, when are we going to set the election? Looks like we're going to have a delay, but then we're going to ultimately set the election for, you know, election in May of 2013. We'll set that election with plenty of time for candidates for the PUD directorship to file. We will collect the $300 from the petitioners, if that hasn't already been done, and the county will pay the cost of the election up front, so that the petitioners don't have to pay the cost of the election up front, but the election will be up front. And then the question is, when the voters vote, let's assume they approve it, then the county then certifies, or at least an official, probably the elections clerk, certifies that the election has been approved. Now the county or the elections official is now ready to say, okay, the district is now ready to be formed. Now, isn't that one way to look at it? And that's when the $24,600 is due, because now the district has been formed. So now what's the cost under Lane Manuel of the 20 of forming this district, now that the voters have approved and the county has approved and everyone's approved? Well, the answer is now the $24,600 fee kicks in, and we will receive that funds from either the PUD or the water district. And everybody has had what they think should happen has occurred. What do you think of that, Mr. Clark?
Chair, if I could jump in here, and I think perhaps Commissioner Sorensen remembers this from the conversations when this was adopted, because I believe Commissioner Sorensen was here when they adopted it. The problem is all the work's been done. We have not only paid for the election, we've paid for all of the other work that we've done. And if they fail, who's going to pay when they lost?
Well, nobody, because the district's not formed, and it only says you have to pay the money when it's formed.
Well, no, it doesn't. It says for the elections, you only have to pay if it's formed. Our charge is up front, and the reason is because all of our work is up front. And if they fail, they won't pay us. Why? They just lost, and we have expended significant amounts of staff time on something without getting reimbursed. So I believe those were the conversations, and that was why the board adopted this fee schedule and adopted it so that it's required up front, because if they lose, we're never going to see that money. But we expended all of the time and resources. As Mr. Clark said, we don't have much to do after the election. It's all done prior to that. So I looked back to see kind of why we justified this and why the board adopted it, and that was why. It's because we do all the work ahead of time, and we can't be on the hook for all that work for the failed elections, and as you know, there are those.
Well, it seems like one thing we might do is we might continue the public hearing on this so that we can take additional public testimony on the very narrow issue of whether or not the district boundaries are proper. I, for one, don't really need that opportunity for more, but I agree that one of the things that this does trigger is if we were to make that determination tonight, it would then trigger this requirement that Mr. Clark has spoke about And so I guess at this point I would favor continuation of this public hearing. And if the board and the if the county council and the petitioners could the council could get together and try to figure out a way out of this to both make sure that the Lane County taxpayers are not going to get stuck with the cost, and at the same time that the county's Lane Manual provision does not frustrate what is really an enshrined provision of the Oregon Constitution that people have the right to form public utility districts. So I see that as a policy conflict. And for those of you who are following this over time, I did take the view that these fees can be considered, they can be considered an obstruction of the rights of people to form these districts. And if there's a way for us to allow the election to go forward and collect these fees, maybe this additional time that we're gonna be getting out of this delay, maybe that can happen, but there may be a hard line here where, you know, some people, maybe me, takes the view that these fees operate as a bar to the public's ability to get a lawful petition in front of a voter, and maybe some other people take the view that, hey, we said it's $24,600 and it doesn't say cash up front, but we want it in gold up front. And to me, there's got to be maybe some wiggle room in between.
Well, I kind of liken this a little bit, Darren. My years as mayor of the city of Springfield, you know, I think if we took that same attitude, because I will assure you, developers hate system development charges. They hate them. But guess what? They pay them. And they pay them up front. You don't pay them at your occupancy certification. You pay them up front before you move forward, because as a home rule charter city, you have that ability. As a home rule charter county, you have that ability. Now, whether it's right or wrong, I don't know. I mean, that's one of those things that I think you can have an ongoing dialogue. But this is obviously a policy that was put in place long before I became a county commissioner, but that's really kind of where we are today, right, where we are right now. And I think what's happened here is that we had an order that specifically looked at the boundary, and but, you know, and Mr. Gerber had every right coming forward and during the public testimony, he wanted to comment and talk about the fees. So I think that's where we are today, and I actually support the idea of go ahead, extend the public hearing out to the November 7th date, and if we can get, you know, and I'm okay if we can get an outside legal counsel to take a look at this, if you're willing to. I mean, that's whether that'll help or not, I don't know. But this is the challenge, I think, that comes up at times, and, you know, I understand. And I think Commissioner Bozovich had a comment as well.
Yeah, I will also support continuing the public hearing to November 7th and having that continued hearing in Eugene. Unfortunately, it's really prohibitive for us to continue to come back to Florence. For at that point, the only decision before the board is going to be about the fees. I haven't heard any testimony tonight that's disagreeing with the boundary, one way or the other. Either people want to be added in or removed from it. I think that question is fairly well settled in front of the board. But I find Commissioner Sorensen's comments about me paying the fee interesting, seeing I wasn't here when it was adopted, but he was.
I'm being consistent.
Yeah, yeah. And if it is an obstruction, I kind of question why he adopted it in the first place. I have requested, and the board has agreed with me, majority of the board, that to direct staff to review that fee and whether it's the appropriate amount and whether it's being charged on a proper basis, whether assessed value is the correct way to determine the fee or if it should be determined in some other manner. But there is a significant cost to the county that gets spent prior to the election, from legal staff to the elections officials that certify the petitions to assessment taxation that has to deal with identifying the parcels that are within the district that are going to have to change their tax designations post-election. There is a significant amount of work that gets done by the county. It's not fair for us to ask a citizen of Blue River to subsidize an election for Hasita Water District or Hasita PUD. That's what this whole reason why we chose to do fees to recover cost and fees charged up front to recover costs, so that we wouldn't be left, the citizens, i.e. that weren't involved, are left, which is why they usually identified the petitioners as the ones responsible for the fees. But I still want to resolve the conflict between the election costs that are mentioned in ORS versus our ability to charge and recover costs under our home rule charter. And then also resolve the issue of, are we being consistent and are we setting ourselves up for an equal protection and equal application of the law suit if we choose to wait and allow somebody maybe to bond the cost or do whatever and treat them differently than we've treated other districts and other issues that are covered under this fee. I mean, we've had a water district form that we charge that cost upfront based on their assessed value previously. And if we choose to do something different in this case, we could have them come back and ask for their fees back, or at least the interest on their fees on the period from when they paid them till after the election, and legal costs and whatever. So with that, I would move that we continue the hearing to November 7th. Do we know if the 1:30 slot's open?
Starting in November, we cannot start back up again until 2:30 because the city of Eugene will be there. So we can either do 2:30 or you could pick a time in the morning. There's nothing time certain in the morning yet.
Let's just do 2:30.
Perfect.
November 7th. I guess it's still the BCC conference room?
We should be in Harris Hall. Should be in Harris Hall,
okay,
by November 7th.
So Harris Hall in Eugene.
Second. Okay, so further discussion. Commissioner Handy.
Thank you. And Mr. Chair, I have a question for Mr. Meyer, the general manager of the Water District. Can we ask him to come up?
Absolutely.
Yeah, that'd be great. And as he's coming up, too, there was a reference to some public comment earlier that I guess might best be summed up as a little indelicate, but I want to appreciate folks' ability and right to come out and say what they need to say to our government. We've got a lot of great folks in government, and And the fact is, there's a dark underside to bureaucracy and government too, and it's important that folks come out and point out what your barriers are towards getting responsiveness to government. So I appreciate that that was done. Mr. Meyer, one of the questions that came up early on before the hearing, maybe you're the one who could address this, that in the what-if scenario, if the city folks in Driftwood Shores and Fawn Ridge themselves did not vote positively in an election and then therefore got pulled out of the district, or the question really was, in my mind, was if they vote not to be a part of the PUD, and yet you would still be servicing those folks, how would all that work in your view? Are there, is that an entangled thing, or can you help me cut through what would happen in that, for instance? Was I clear with my question?
Yep, I think you're gonna find it isn't gonna be 100% in favor of dissolving the Seat of Water and creating the PUD. So it's not just those people, it's some other people. So it's a vote of the people. They're kind of, unfortunately, Driftwood Shores and Fawn Ridge, they're kind of stuck, unfortunately, because of infrastructure. If the city of Florence could put infrastructure to deliver water to those two places, they would have done it if it would have been cost feasible, but it's not. So they may say they don't want to belong, but they're, you know, you just can't put in a water line. I think Florence actually looked at it and it was over $2 million to run another water line out to Driftwood Shores. Well, we look at things as far as the ratepayers, and to have duplicate lines, duplication of lines is just out of the question. You know, it's difficult to pay for what you have now, let alone put in new infrastructure. So yeah, they may not like it, but it's kind of the way it is, right? I'd rather at my house where I live, might rather have City of Florence water, but that's who I have is the Sea of Water. That was kind of, I don't want Florence water, I want my water that we produce. So did that answer your question?
Well, if the question is that there is perhaps some precincts or some a cumulative city vote that is a no, but doesn't affect an overall vote of yes, what would be the practical impacts of that city tally on what happens next?
There would be no impact because they don't get a pick and choose. It's either 100% or not, right? It's because it gets back to the infrastructure. You can't put another line in along our line so they could go with the City of Florence, right? Or if it would have been feasible, they would have already done that when the annexation time came. Now, the thing to remember is this turning into a PUD doesn't stop annexation. They're still going to be able to annex whatever they want. But what it does stop is the withdrawal of a seat of our property from our district and make it a City of Florence water provider. That's what the PUD does. I hope everybody's aware of that.
Mr. Clark, do you have any input on that question? Thank you very much.
Only this. I potentially distinguish between the political boundaries and the service boundaries. If folks in the separate areas of Fawn Ridge and Driftwood Shores elect not to form the PUD, and yet the PUD is formed by the rest of the voters, you've got, as Mr. Myers points out, sort of the impractical situation of having two districts with one infrastructure trying to provide service. I think at that point, probably the dissolution of the water district occurs. The only provider in the neighborhood is the PUD. It sounds like the city providing the service is impractical, and the folks who are not in the political boundary of the PUD could probably ask the PUD nevertheless to serve them water.
Actually, has to serve them. I was involved in some litigation. You can't deny water service to people.
So there may be an IGA and an intergovernmental agreement that would have to be.
I don't think it even takes an IGA.
That's what EPUD has been doing for a while, is providing service to areas that aren't within its boundaries. So.
based on my experience in litigation, if you're providing water service to an area and you tell them you're not going to provide water, you have problems. Big problems.
Unless, of course, it's prohibited for the water district to move out, you know, for a new development.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Sorensen?
I wanted to ask Mr. Gerber a couple more questions, if that'd be okay. You know, I'll play the devil's advocate here for a question and ask him for this instance and say, the lane manual provision says that you will pay $24,600 for any special district change that is a formation of that special district. You haven't paid the $24,600. Can Lane County refuse to put on the ballot the formation of the district because you haven't done what the Lane manual says you have to do, even though you did all the other things that the state statute said you have to do?
Well, I think the answer to that is Lane County's got to put it on the ballot. We don't have to pay the $24,000, at least not until we get past the election. And the reason I say that is the state has preempted this area of the law. They have legislated down to the minutia about how this process is supposed to go. And as in criminal law, the county or the city can pass criminal laws that are less restrictive than the state, but not more restrictive. And that's what basically preemption is all about. And that's where I'm coming from in this argument.
What did you think of my idea that you haven't really formed a district until you've had the election, so you can't...
I'd have to read the manual language and see exactly what it says.
Special district boundary changes that are formations, dissolutions, mergers, consolidations, and incorporations over $250 million assessed valuation, $24,600.
I would want to read it word for word. I'm not so good at listening to things and thinking through the legal consequences
but
of it.
But your view is, hey, we haven't formed this district, so the county has to follow the state law and collect the $300, get your bond from your three petitioners, their agreement to pay the costs of the county. And by the way, does that cost for the election include the elections for the director positions?
I don't think so. Because
just for the formation.
The statute speaks only to formation, not to directors. And second of all, you know, the election costs are separate, of course, from the formation fee. Mm-hmm. And those election costs we do have to pay.
Uh-huh.
And I would hope the county is not going to charge us for all the work that was done by the county because they had not properly instructed us on how to do things, and all the time was spent with county council and with Ms. Medchart, and I do appreciate their cooperation. It was a very difficult process to sort out how all this was supposed to go down. At one point, the petition was supposed to be 2 or 3 pages, and the county regulations are 2 pages, and we just had all kinds of issues.
Do you want to add anything else before I ask the water manager a question?
No, I don't think so. I think my argument is preemption. This area has been preempted by the state. They've legislated down to minutia, far more specific than even in criminal law,
okay,
how this is to happen.
Thank you. And could you come up, and you raised your hand. I wanted to ask you, what were you trying to say?
Well, you brought it up twice about the commissioners and the election of the commissioners. According to our attorney, which specializes in this kind of thing, the elections for, if the PUD is formed, the elections won't occur in May. They'll occur sometime down the road.
For the PUD election?
Correct.
Okay.
The CDOT commissioners will stay as commissioners until election can be set up, right? I was just trying to clarify.
Okay. Do you know, off the top of your head, what provisions of the PUD formation law govern the time frame for the election of the PUD?
No, I don't.
Uh-huh. Okay. Let's see.
It's 190.
190. 261. ORS 261-190 says election of the first board of directors
candidates must be electors, they must have lived in the district for 2 years, they have a right to vote. All the electors have a right to vote for all five candidates, And Commissioner, do you know when the election happens?
Not less than 1 year following the election to create the district.
Okay, so the county or the new district, someone has to, the county governing body shall call no more than one election for the formation in 1 year. And so after that election, I take it that's when, after the formation election, later is the five positions for the people.
Correct.
Okay. Yep. So that's at least not a cost associated with the formation.
Correct.
Okay. Another question is, how much money does it cost to have an election within the water district, which I understand is the same district boundaries that we're going to determine on November 7 at 2:30? How much does it cost to have an election?
To the water district?
Yeah, to the water district.
The only cost to the water district is staff time and then basically the bill we get from Lane County.
Yeah, how much is it?
And it depends on, I believe our last election we had two commissioners.
Okay.
And I think it was like $2,700 to $3,200.
Okay,
and
so.
We had a recall in 2009 and that was $5,500.
And how many people were up for the recall?
Three.
Three. So you had three elections for the recall, and then you had two for the relatively recent positions.
Yeah, I believe the difference was the recall was on a special election.
Okay.
It wasn't on the
regular. So it cost more money.
Correct.
Okay. So somewhere in the $3,000 to $5,000 range would be maybe the cost here, maybe even lower, for this formation election.
Correct.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Is there further discussion? All right, so we have a motion and a second, so we'll call for the vote. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, carries unanimous. So we'll extend this hearing to November 7th. I don't think we have any other business tonight, so we'll see the board tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock.